Robert D. from the Central Coast.
Take as much time as you want, man.
As much time as I want?
Yeah.
You're not nervous, are you?
Always.
Right on. My name's Robert and I'm an addict. Wow. First, I want to thank Scott and Brandy for asking me to come down here and share my strength and hope with you guys. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. And I want to thank my wife and my friend Paul for coming down here with me. Yeah. And I want to thank the committee for saying it's okay for me to show up here. Brandy and Scott were over in our area here recently, and I don't know what they heard, but they asked me to come and share over here. So I don't know, you know, I don't think my story is that exciting, but it's my story. Okay. The young man who took 18 days, was it?
Yeah.
Welcome to Narcotics Anonymous. You know, you are home. Yes. Okay. Since they've given me at least an hour, you know, I'm going to start by saying that I come from a family of 14 kids. You know, I have seven brothers. Yes, I'm Mexican. That's right. I'm not real Mexican because I only have two. But I have seven brothers and I have six sisters, you know, and three of my brothers did time, you know, and I've been to jail in and out a few times, but not to prison, but and I don't think that really matters right here in Narcotics Anonymous. It's, you know, it's about how we felt when we got here, you know, and when I got here, I was desperate. In desperation, we sought help from Narcotics Anonymous, you know, and that's how I felt when I got here, you know. The first time I ever took anything, I was 12 years old, you know, and me and my brother, he's 1 year older than me, and a couple of friends went and stole a couple of cans of paint and some socks, and we went up to the sand dunes over in Oceano, and that was the first time I ever got high, you know, and I liked it. I liked it. Now, I didn't keep sniffing paint at that time, but I did start smoking weed, and I did start drinking, you know, and my disease progressed, I guess rather quickly, you know, kind of with a little bump in the road, you know, by the time I was in eighth grade, I had started taking acid, you know, and I had a really I had a bad trip on acid, you know, because I really didn't know what acid was like, right? I'm 13 years old, and my brothers are taking acid, and my brother-in-laws are taking acid, you know, and so I thought that was the thing to do, you know, and so I did, you know, and after about 3 hours, I wanted to come down, right? And it's not happening, you know. It's not happening, you know. And so my brother, you know, I'm like really nervous, you know. I don't know what the hell to do anymore. And so he takes me to the school and has me running around the track trying to get me to come down. You know, so because of that, though, you know, I kept getting flashbacks, you know, and so I actually quit using drugs for a while, you know. I started going to church with my mom, and my mom was a very very Christian lady, and my dad never went to church, okay, and so half my family today goes to church, and the other half doesn't, okay. And we even have, I was telling my wife, we even have some cops in the family, right? And I have a nephew that's a police officer here in town, you know. My sister is also buried here in Visalia. And up until the fifth grade, I lived over in Early Mark, California, you know, just down the road, you know. anyways, you know, I tried to come down from that acid, you know, and I kept getting flashbacks, and like I said, my brother was taking me, and we'd run around the track and trying to come down, and so I quit using, and I started going to church with my mom, you know, and I did that for about a year and a half, maybe 2 years. But, you know, I started getting into sports in school, you know, and so I ran track in school. I played football in high school, and I also did a little bit of wrestling in high school, you know. And because of that was my outlet, you know. That's what kept me from going out and using again, for whatever reason, you know. That worked for me at that time, you know. But what happened is that I fell in love with the girl, you know, and we had a relationship for a couple of years, and I come from a farm labor family, you know. I myself worked in out in the fields of picking vegetables till I was 20 years old, you know. And where was I going? Yeah, I'm getting old. But, you know, so, you know, I had a girlfriend and I fell in love and we're in a relationship for a couple of years and she got pregnant and my mom, who was a Christian lady, and her mom, who was a Christian lady, decided that she needed to have an abortion, you know, and so that's what happened. You know, I really didn't have any say in it, but that, you know, that was the adult's decision, you know. And a while after that, I went to Morgan Hill, and we used to go down there quite a bit and pick prunes, you know. And so I went down there for the summer, and my best friend started dating my girlfriend while I was gone. And so when I came back, I had a hard time dealing with that, right? And that was the year of my junior year in high school, you know. And so because of that, you know, I would still sneak over to her house and crawl into her bed, and because of that, she had a couple more abortions, you know. And abortion became her way for us to have birth control, you know, because she was sleeping with two guys, you know. When I went back to school on my senior year, I went for 2 weeks, and I had a really hard time dealing with watching them together, you know, and dealing just being in school. And so I dropped out of school, you know. And what happened was, as soon as I dropped out of school, I got into hanging out with the gangs, you know, and I started smoking weed, started drinking again, started dropping acid again, started sniffing pain again, you know, and everything just progressed rather quickly, you know. And pretty soon I was shooting heroin, you know, and that was my drug of choice for a while, you know, up until the last year before I came into recovery, you know. Gang banging became a normal way of life, you know. And today I know that I have a God, and I know that my God was working in my life even before I got to Narcotics Anonymous, you know. And the reason I know that is because when we were breaking and entering, people were getting arrested and I wasn't. When we were gang banging and people were getting shot and killed, I wasn't. You know, and so I know that God was working in my life before I got to Narcotics Anonymous. I just didn't know it at the time. You know, my mom was the type of person that when I came home drunk as can be, she would get up at midnight, 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, get up, make me something to eat, and then I'd go to bed, and she'd come and kneel down next to me on my bed and start praying, you know. So I know today that her prayers, you know, is one of the reasons that I'm still here today, right? You know, and so my disease progressed, you know. I had always worked, you know. My dad, one thing that my dad taught us was how to work. Ever since I was 7 years old, I started working in the fields. And like I said, I worked there till I was 20 years old, and then I got into construction, you know, and today I work for the Department of Transportation. Okay. See, I lost my train of thought again. I'm getting old. Yeah. I started shooting heroin and gang banging and sniffing pain and all that stuff. You know, and eventually I got the job at Caltrans. You know, and I was there about a year, year and a half, just over a year. You know, and the drugs were really affecting my life. You know, and what happened was that I went in, I started using coke, is what happened. You know, speedballing. You know, and then towards the end, just coke by itself, shooting coke. I never snorted coke. I always shot coke, right? And I started seeing people, and I started hearing voices, and I started chasing people down the road, and I started calling the cops on myself, you know. And you know, one of the reasons, you know, I used coke was because people said that you could have good sex on coke. They just forgot to tell me that it was going to be by myself. And really, that's how it ended. You know, I was working at the rest area, and we had a little storage shed behind the bathrooms where, you know, I used to mow the lawns and clean the bathrooms and all that. And I would lock myself in that storage shed, and I would always take a gram or two to work with me and my outfit. And I would lock the door back and lock myself in that storage shed, and I had a stack of magazines, you know, that people would always leave at the rest area, you know, and that was my life, you know, that was my life, you know, shooting coke and, well, you know, having sex by myself. I don't think I have to go into detail, all right? Yeah, when I got to the point where the drugs just weren't working anymore. You know, my life was not working anymore. You know, I my wife, who was at the time, we were just living together, and she is probably another one of the reasons that I'm still here today. You know, I dealt drugs, and I never made no money, right? I always used all the profit, you know. So my wife became my drug dealer, you know. The guys would come over and drop off the drugs, and she would take control because that's what she does. She's been an Al-Anon for 28 years. that's what she did. You know, she did it to not only save my ass, but she did it to save my family, you know, her and my daughter, you know, because the way I was that at the end, I would turn off all the lights in our house, you know, and I would get my wife and my 5-year-old daughter on the floor, and we'd crawl from one end of the house to the other, because I thought there was people out there trying to get me, right? And I would go to bed, and I'd be laying there, and I could hear people right outside my door. I could hear people trying to get in. And I would slowly get out of bed, and I would slowly tiptoe towards the door, and I would slowly turn that doorknob, and I would yank the door open, and I could see him running around the corner. And so I'd take off running, you know, and about 2 blocks down the road, there was nobody around, right? Just me, you know. So that's how my life was before I got here to Narcotics Anonymous. I went in and talked to my boss one day at Caltrans and asked him for some help, you know. And he said, what seems to be the problem? And the problem that I told him was that I had marital problems, you know, that me and my wife weren't getting along, because I was too afraid to tell him that I had a drug problem,
because I thought that I was going to get fired. You know? And so they sent me to a psychiatrist there in Atascadero. Not at the hospital, though.
Not at the mental hospital, but a psychiatrist. You know? And right there, for the first time outside the people that I hung with, right, my homeboys, my connection, my wife, you know, that knew that I used drugs, I told somebody outside that circle, you know. And that psychiatrist shared with me that he was a recovering drug addict, a recovering heroin addict, you know. And so he recommended that I go to the care unit in Oxnard, California, you know. And so the process began to get me to Oxnard, you know, and they signed me up, and I was supposed to drive myself to Oxnard, which is about 2.5 hours, maybe 3 hours from my house. And my wife would give me the money in the morning and leave to work. And then I would leave, and I'd get about 20 miles down the road, and I'd turn around, and I'd go score. Right? And then she'd come home, she's like, "What are you doing here?" I'm like, I couldn't go, you know, and I had used the money. So the next day, she gave me some more money, right? And she left for work. And I drove about 20 miles down the road, and I turned around, and I went and scored again. You know, and she came home, and she sees me there, and she says, "What are you doing here?" Right? And I'm like, "I couldn't go." Yeah. So the third day, she took the day off work. And she drove me to Oxnard. Yeah. And we stayed in a motel, a dungy motel, I don't even know, in the Colonia somewhere, you know. And there was a guy on the phone book, and I remember this, you know. I don't remember a lot of shit, but I remember some stuff, right? And I was trying to get her to go down there and score from that guy on the phone, because he looked like a drug addict to me, right? And she's like, "No, I ain't going." And I'm like, "Please, please," you know. She's like, "No, I'm not going," you know. And so she didn't go, you know. In the morning, she drove me to the care unit, you know, and I was begging her the whole time, "Please, just take me home. Take me home. I promise I won't use. I promise. Just take me home," you know. And she's like, "Well, we're already here. You know, you might as well stay," you know. And I was begging, and I was crying, and I didn't know what I was going to do, you know. And she left me there, and I don't know. I did 21 days there, and I don't remember very much about it, except maybe the last week when I started going to meetings, you know, or I don't know, maybe 7 days I was out of it. I can't remember, you know. But they took me to meetings. I remember they took me to meetings, and I heard this speaker, you know, and he was pretty funny, you know. I mean, he was a boxer, and he was talking about he'd take a little, you know, coke, and he'd box, and take a little more coke, and he'd box, and I thought that was hilarious. You know, but when they said, you know, is there any newcomers here, you know, you had to raise your hand and say, "Yeah, my name is Robert and I'm an addict." And I couldn't do that, you know. So I'm glad that you did, you know. I'm glad that you raised your hand. I'm glad that you came up here. I'm glad that you're in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. Miracles happen here, you know. I think the second meeting I was able to raise my hand and say, "My name is Robert and I'm an addict," you know. And I spent 21 days at that care unit hospital, and it was time for me to go home, you know. The insurance only covered so much, and I was crying. See, I was crying because I didn't know how I was going to stay clean. You know, I didn't know that I could stay clean. You know, and I didn't want to leave because I felt safe. And my wife came and picked me up, and we drove to Santa Barbara and stopped at the zoo. And we got home, and somebody had broken in our house. So I went to look for them, and I found the dope, and I was off and running again. Not even one day clean, you know. And a couple months later, I was in jail, back in jail, Tulare County Jail, right here. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Dirty ass jail. I come from San Luis Obispo, where they paint the walls
so you don't get angry, right? And everything's so pretty, right? Yeah. You come to Tulare County Jail and all this dirt and crap on the walls and stuff, nasty, yes. You know, but I got arrested because I was down here scoring, you know, with a couple of guys that I knew from down here in the valley, and one of them OD'd. He didn't die, but he overdosed, you know, and the only place to take him in Urgemar, California was the fire station, and that's where we took him, you know, and the cops showed up, and they took us to jail, you know, and I had a gram of heroin left that I stuck in the bumper, you know, and I had a little baggie, a little one shot here in my little pocket here, and when they took me to jail, they didn't check that pocket, you know, and so when I was in the jailhouse, I met friends right away. Yeah, I got some heroin, right? You know, I hadn't been over in this area in a long time, you know, 15 years or 20 years, you know, so, but a lot of the people that were in jail, I still knew when I left at fifth grade, and I still knew those people, same faces, same addicts, right? We're everywhere, you know. The faces change, but the addicts are there, you know. I got out of there, and I used that last gram of heroin that I had left, you know, and then that was it. Like, what am I going to do now? You know, what am I going to do now? I remember getting arrested and calling my wife and asking her to bail me out. And for the first time, she said no. She said no, right. And that's what it takes sometimes, you know. It's for the people who love you to let you hit your bottom, you know. And I use that last gram. The thing that I learned most in that care unit was that there was meetings out here. You know, and I walked back into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, and I was there, I don't know, a month or two, whatever, I'm not sure. Somebody told me, he goes, you need to ask that guy, this big, ugly-looking biker dude, you know, to be your sponsor. You know, the guy had 2 years. 2 years. I'm like, holy moly, 2 years, right? We had a guy there with 6 years. Yeah, that was amazing, right? And then everybody else was pretty much 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, whatever, you know. And so at that time, there was only meetings, very few meetings, 4 meetings a week. And I had to travel 20 miles in each direction to get to a meeting, you know. And that's what we did. And we did it as a group of about 20 or 30 of us. And we hung together. And we stayed together. And everywhere we went together, you know. And a lot of those people are still clean today. My friend Jack, who was my sponsor, just had 32 years last week. You know, my friend Keith is 29 years now. You know, Larry, who had 6 years, went back out. We had 6 years when I got there, went back out. Mo, who moved from San Jose to our area, had 10 years at that time, and he moved in after we had been there for a while. And he died after 25 years clean. He died dirty. You know, and Mike, who had 8 years when he moved over here from San Jose, went out after 8 years. You know, and he had 5 years when he moved to our area and went out after 8 years, came back and got clean and stayed clean and passed away clean. You know, and to me, those are the success stories. You know, here in Narcotics Anonymous, nothing matters except that we stay clean. You know. What happened for me, though, is that I had all these character defects, see, and I hadn't learned how to deal with them yet, you know. And one of my biggest character defects was cheating on my wife. You know, I was cheating when we lived together. I was cheating ever since, probably almost since I met her. You know, and my nephews or my friends would come to the house, and they say, "Let's go to the store," and we go to the store, and I might be back in 3 days or 2 weeks or 3 weeks, and just never knew, right? And I brought that into recovery, you know. And so while I was in recovery, I was still cheating on my wife, you know. And I had to learn how to not to do that, you know. I had to learn how to be kind, you know. I had to learn how to not be so angry, you know. I had to learn how to not hurt people, you know. I learned all that stuff here in Narcotics Anonymous.
I learned it from you guys. Right? And it's been a process. You know, and one day I came home, I had a year and a half, and because I was cheating, I wasn't able to live with myself anymore. And I came home and I started throwing clothes, and I don't know, I don't even know if I had a suitcase, maybe a bag. But I told my wife, I gotta go. And she's like, well, what's the matter? I go, I don't know, I just gotta go. I'll be back in 2 weeks. You know, I didn't come back for 6 months. You know, and I went with my sponsor. He took me to L.A. and met some people over there. Came back, and I moved in with him for a while. And then my friend Mike was managing this grungy motels, and he allowed me to stay in one of the rooms, you know, as long as I kept an eye on the property. It was just a room, and I had a hot plate. You know, and that's where I lived. My family was down the road, about 3 blocks down the road, and I couldn't go home. I couldn't go home because I wasn't living right. I was clean, but I wasn't living right. For me, I think that's when the third step really came infiltrated into my life. I fell to my knees in that little room, and I asked God to come into my life. And little by little, my life began to change in that little room. You know, and a while later, I was able to go home. You know, and got to be with my wife. She wasn't my wife at the time, even though we had two kids. Right? We still weren't married. You know, my second sponsor, who was my sponsor after Jack was my sponsor for 2 years. My second sponsor was my sponsor for 22 years. His name was Tom. You know, and his wife was my wife's sponsor in Al-Anon. You know, and I remember getting together with them, and they had gone moved back in with my wife, we went to Denny's, of course, Denny's. You know, we all go to Denny's, right? And they asked me to pick a date. You know, and I'm like, well, what's the date for? They go, don't worry, you just pick a date. And I said, July 15th. And they said, that's when you're getting married. And I'm scared shitless, right? I've only been living with the lady for 12 years and have two kids, but I'm scared shitless. You know? And I'm like, whoa, whoa, you know? And then something just said, easy does it. Easy does it. You know, and I remember proposing to her, you know, and after living with her for 12 years, I had to propose to her in bed, in the dark. Because I didn't have any courage. I didn't have any way of I didn't know any way of really being a man, you know. I learned that here in Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I learned how to be a man here in Narcotics Anonymous, you know. And when we started looking for a place, the only place that we found was in a little town next to us. It's called Templeton. And the only date that was open was July 15th, you know. And that's how God works in my life. That's how God works in my life and continues to work that way in my life. After we were married for about a year, I was thinking I made the wrong decision. I made the wrong decision after a year. After living with her for 12 years, being married for a year, now I'm thinking I made the wrong decision. And I used to do a lot of running at the time, and I was over at the track, and I was running around the track, and there was this old man walking around the track, and something told me, stop. Stop and talk to this man. And I did. And he'd been a veteran of some war, I can't remember exactly. And he told me three things that were important in life. He said family and marriage, and I can't remember the last thing. But that day I made the decision that I was going to stay in this relationship. That was 26 years ago, in this coming July. We've been together for almost 38 years, you know, and my relationship with my wife, and my old sponsor Jack always tells me, you need to talk more about your wife. Yeah. And so I try to always get a little bit of her, because she is a really, really wonderful woman. She's a very giving woman. She's a very strong woman. You know, and I needed that in my life. You know, I really did. I just didn't know that. You know, I know I love her more today than I ever have. I know when I walk by our bedroom and she's on her knees praying, that just, does something to me inside that I can't explain. You know? I just love that. That's what Narcotics Anonymous is doing for us. Not for us. Yeah. I have a 35-year-old daughter. I have a 26-year-old son. You know, they played softball and baseball, and I got to be a part of that as they were growing up. My son played here in Visalia quite a bit. Every weekend we were coming this way, either here or Tulare or somewhere playing baseball. You know, I got to travel with my daughter all over California playing softball, fast pitch softball, you know, and even out to Missouri, you know, to watch her play in the Nationals, you know, and I got to watch my son go to the playoffs in baseball and be a part of that, you know, and one game, one win away from going to the Babe Ruth World Series, you know, and, you know, they had a great team, you know, and I got to coach. I didn't know shit about coaching, right? I didn't know anything, right? I'm like, when my daughter was, she's the older one, she was 12 years old. She came home, she goes, Dad, I want to play softball. And I'm like, no. No. Yeah, you ain't playing softball. You know, she's a girly girl, right? And she goes, no, Dad, I really want to play, you know. And I'm like, if you play, you're not quitting. You know, and she played that year, and she played for a lot of years, and she played into junior college, you know, and my son played into junior college, and he played over at Westmont College, where he graduated from, over in Santa Barbara, you know, and God continues to do things for our lives, you know, and my daughter is, you know, she likes to party, you know, and she likes to drink, she likes to smoke that non-addicting weed, you know. And my dream, one of my dreams before I got to Narcotics Anonymous was to grow old and smoke weed with my kids. That was one of my dreams. One of my other dreams was to go to prison like my brothers. See? My thinking was so distorted before I came to Narcotics Anonymous. It was twisted. Twisted Tom, where are you? I can't remember much, but I'll remember Twisted Tom. My son was born in recovery. I had 2 years clean when my son was born. The difference between him and my daughter are evident. You know, she's a drinker. She's a partier. She's a rebel. She gives me headaches. Lots of them. And, you know, when she was growing up, you know, we had a hard time with her in school. She was in junior high when she was a really smart kid. But in junior high, she started coming home with us. You know, and so the teacher would say, she's not turning in her homework. So we'd sit down and do homework with her, put it in her backpack, and she wouldn't turn it in. You know, and from that point on, her life kind of just got, even though she played sports, even though she went to junior college, something happened, right, that triggered some of her disease, you know, something that I really don't have the right to share here, but it happened to her, right, and it was one of the things that happened to me when I was 12 years old. You know, that I was molested, you know, by a brother, you know, and those are the kind of things that I had to look at when I did my four-step inventory. Why was I so angry? Why was sex so important in my life? Yeah, still is. Just not as much. But why, you know, all these, why did I cheat all the time? You know, and I had to look at those things when I did my inventory. And the first inventory I ever did, I put it in a drawer and I didn't go share it. And nothing happened. Nothing happened. Because I didn't share my inventory. Oh, yeah, forgot. My wife found it. So something did happen. She found it and she read it. I don't know what she read. We've never really discussed it. You know what I mean? But, you know, when I moved back home and when I got my new sponsor, I had to do another inventory. And I did have to share that with him. And I did have to tell him all those secrets, you know. And I did have to tell him, or try to identify how I felt. Because I didn't know. I didn't know what I felt when I got here. You know, I didn't know that I wasn't capable of being a dad. I wasn't capable of being a husband. I wasn't capable of being a friend, you know, because there was always what's in it for me. You know, when my daughter turned, I think, 20, and she was going to Cuesta College. And by that time, my wife, I always babied her. And my wife had thought I had enough of her at, I don't know, about 16, 17. And she goes, all right, well, then you take care of her, right? You deal with her. And let me tell you, it wasn't easy. And I didn't know how to do it. And I would get the belt and I would whip the shit out of her. And I would leave welts on her legs and on her back. And her friends would tell me, you need to call the cops on your dad. You know, I have a few years clean now at that time. You know, but I still didn't know how to be a dad. You know, I didn't know how to discipline. My son, who was born in recovery, and I had more years by the time he was 11 or 12, you know, I think maybe 8, I think it was, when he did something that was wrong. And I told him, you know what, you need to put your hands on the bed. And I spanked him. I spanked him. And he cried. And I walked out of the room. And I came back about an hour later. And I'm like, this is why I had to spank you. You know, and I said, will you give me a hug? And he said, no. And I walked out. And I came back later. And I said, will you give me a hug? He says, yes. I never had to spank him again. You know, and I've learned that here in Narcotics Anonymous. I learned how to be a dad in Narcotics Anonymous. I learned how to be a husband in Narcotics Anonymous. I learned how to be an employee in Narcotics Anonymous. At work, I've been working for Caltrans now for 32 years. Yeah. The thing is that I always worked, but I never worked full time, right? I always worked during the summer and I collected unemployment during the winter. Kick back, drink, do drugs, go party, leave, be back in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever, you know. In recovery, I learned how to work full time. Even though I had my job with Caltrans, I was always, actually, my wife was always calling in sick for me on Monday. And then she learned how to not do that, you know. And I have over 700 hours of vacation in my books today.
Wow.
I have 900 hours of sick leave in my books today because I love working. I love being a responsible person. I love being a member of society, you know. I learned that here in Narcotics Anonymous. Here in Narcotics Anonymous, I learned how to be responsible, how to be accountable, how to be self-supporting. You know, we talk about that here a lot, you know, and we have to go out and do it. I have to go out and do it. I can't tell anybody how to run their program, right? This program works if we work it. You know, my character defects have slowly improved, not removed. It had slowly improved, sometimes very slowly. Right? When I came into recovery and I got married, and I didn't cheat anymore, right? That was the first step. But I started going to strip bars, you know, and I like hanging out at strip bars with my nephews, with my nieces, you know. We hung out there, man. We had a good time, you know, and then that had to change. For me, that had to change, you know, and I started getting into internet porn, right? And I did that for a while, and that also had to change when the computer went down and the computer... The computer repair guy came to the house and he pops up and porn, right? There's a lot of shame in that. There was a lot of shame in that. And I knew that this wasn't working for me anymore, you know. And that had to change. And it has changed, you know. When my kids were young, we used to take them to meetings. And it came to a point where meetings were not where my kids needed to be. But they needed to be somewhere where they can learn spirituality. And my wife was Catholic. And I grew up in an apostolic church, which was very strict. I really didn't want to go back to that church. Nothing wrong with that. For me, it didn't work. Okay? So we started going to the Catholic church. Right? When my son did his confirmation as a sophomore, I also did mine. I became a Catholic in recovery. Unheard of, right? It is not required to be a member of a church in Narcotics Anonymous. For me, it enhanced my spirituality. You know, I have a friend who teaches Buddhism, you know, was a Buddhist, and now he's not. But he still teaches the teachings. And I follow him on Facebook. And that has enhanced my spirituality. Right? And I'd look for other areas of my life where I can enhance my spirituality and become a different person other than the addict that was before I got here. You know, the God of my understanding today is different than the God of my understanding when I first came into recovery. You know, my relationship with that God is a lot stronger today than it was when I first came into recovery. You know, I have a relationship with God of my understanding, and I don't really care what you call it, and I call him different things. I call him Father. I call him God. I call him Master. I call him Creator. Yeah, it doesn't matter to me. You know, and so I continue to look outside of these rooms to enhance my spirituality. Not that there's not spirituality here. There's a lot of spirituality in these rooms. But for me, I search other avenues. You know, and it has really helped me in my recovery. Yeah. The thing that I didn't know when I first started working for Caltrans, because I was looking for a job at the time. Okay? I wasn't looking for retirement. I wasn't looking for a vacation. I wasn't looking for sick leave. I wasn't looking for anything else but just to be employed. Right? And here I am 32 years later, and I have a retirement. I have a 401k. And like I said, I have vacation and I have sick leave. And I may retire in a couple of years. I may not. You know, my wife says, quit talking about it because I always change my mind. I still enjoy what I'm doing, but it's only because of Narcotics Anonymous that I still enjoy what I'm doing. Right? Only because of Narcotics Anonymous. Because it was in these rooms that I found my higher power. It was to you people that I found my higher power. You know, when I was 18 years clean, how much time do I have? How long have I been speaking? Anybody know? Because I'll go on forever. Yeah. When I had 18 years clean, me and my wife went to see a movie. And And we were running a little late, and the lady says, "To your right," you know. And so we hustled over there, seen the name of the movie, iRobot, and we went in and sat down, and about a half hour the movie was over. So we went back upstairs and talked to the ladies, like, you know, we just sat down and the movie's already over. She goes, "Well, we can't give you your money back." Oh, at first she asked me, "Well, where did you go?" We said, "Right on the right." And that theater there, she goes, "Oh, you needed to go down the hall to the right." And it was showing in two theaters on the right. We didn't know that. So when we went back up, she says, "I can't give you your money, but if you want to wait for an hour, you can, you know, see the next showing." And we're like, "Okay." Okay, so we're waiting in the theater, and this young man comes down and he says, "You need to get out because we need to clean." You know, and I'm like, "Oh, okay." So we go to the lobby and we're hanging out there, and he comes and he tells my wife, "You know, you have to leave when you get to the part you've already seen." You know, and my wife comes to me and she tells me this, and I'm like, "Don't worry about it, baby." You know what I mean? I'm being serene, right? I'm trying to be, you know, peaceful. Yeah. And so it's like, "Don't worry about it," you know. And so we go and sit down. When the movie starts, we go and sit down. And we haven't even gotten to the part where we've seen, all of a sudden he's standing at the edge of the row, and my wife, "He's over there." I said, "Don't worry about it. He's over there standing there." And I'm like, "Don't worry about it," you know. And then he sends his little friend around and he taps me on the shoulder and he says, "My boss says you have to leave." And I left. My serenity went out the door. And I told him, you know, I won't say it because there's a lot of little kids here, but I told him, "You tell your boss if he wants me out, he's going to have to freaking kick me, get me out," right? And we're sitting there, and my wife, like, gets up. She goes, "I'm going to go talk to them." Left me by myself. Not good. Not good, because my wheels started to spin, right? And pretty soon I'm in the lobby with her, but I don't go up there to talk no more. I'm yelling, cussing, screaming at the top of my lungs. "This little so-and-so, you know what I mean?" And he's looking at me, and I'm so pissed off, and he goes, "Come on, Grandpa." And I'm like, and I'm that close to jumping over the counter, right? But I got to believe it was because I have a God in my life, and because of the rules of Narcotics Anonymous, that I didn't jump over that counter. But for days, I was not right. I was not well. I'm thinking, I'm going to go get my nephews, and they can take care of this shit, right? But it's just my mind, right? Because my disease is in my mind. See, it always starts here, you know? And once it gets in here, I'm in dangerous grounds. I am in dangerous grounds. And I need to go call somebody, get to a meeting or something, get on my knees, something. So I go and I visit my sponsor. And he tells me that I need to write a letter of apology, right? And so I have to do what my sponsor says, right? Because I have a hole in my soul. Even though it may or may not be my fault, I have a hole in my soul. And so I have to write a letter of apology. But he gave me this: do not give it to that kid. You give it to the theater. And that's what I did. You know, and that hole in my soul started to close up. Okay. When I had 20 years clean, I was at work. I'd been there 25 years. We had a new hire, a young kid. He had a year with us, and I was supposed to go and watch them, make sure that they did their job. I wasn't the boss. I was just put in charge. And by the time I got out there, they were already headed back to the yard. And so I told my boss, you know, and he's like, they're already coming back in, you know, they ain't getting nothing done, you know. And the next morning he told me, he's like, hey, you think I'm lazy? And I'm like, yes, I think you're lazy, right? And he started cussing me out. And before I knew it, I had this kid by the throat, right? And what happened was that the program, God, removed that hand before I did anything. And we walked into the boss's office. And I had to tell him, you know, what happened. And it'd been a long time, but I had to lie. I know we're not supposed to lie here in Narcotics Anonymous, but I had to save my job. And I told them I did not put my hands on them, even though I did. Because if there's a couple things that you lose your job over it with the state, and violence in the workplace is at the top of the list. You know, and I wasn't going to lose my job over this young kid. I had to go back later and tell my boss, months later, that I lied. I had to clean it up. I have to clean it up, guys. That's what I'm taught in Narcotics Anonymous. So I try to keep my hands off of people. I try not to lie. Most of the time I don't. You know, last summer, I went to the fair with my friend Alex. He's got 41 years in recovery in Narcotics Anonymous. We went to the fair, and we're walking out of the fair, and we're walking down the sidewalk. And there's a couple about my age, maybe a couple years younger, biracial couple. And all of a sudden, this young man walks right by us, and he just cold cocks that guy. I mean, just nails him right in the side of the head, bumps him into his wife. His wife ends up in the middle of the street on her back and elbows and stuff. And the young man starts screaming at this guy, calling him all kinds of racial names. And I'm trying to mind my own business, right? What is mine and what is not mine, right? And that's what I've learned here in Narcotics Anonymous, right? They started scuffling, and the guy grabbed him from behind, grabbed the young boy from behind. And his wife is panicking. She's saying, help my husband, help my husband. You know, and the husband is saying, I'm getting tired. This kid's probably 28 years old, I think it was, 26. He was 220, you know. And so I tell my friend Alex, who's got 41 years clean, here, hold my sunglasses. And I'm not going to, you know what I mean? I'm trying to, you know, be calm. You know, I'm trying to work my recovery program. And so I asked this kid, I'm like, what is the problem? And he happened to get loose and he nailed me right in between the eyes. And pretty soon he was on the ground and I had him by the throat and I had a chokehold on him. And he's telling me, I can't breathe. I can't breathe. And I'm saying, I don't give a fuck. Right? That's what's coming out of my mouth. See? But what I learned is this, is that once I start to harm somebody intentionally, I'm wrong. See? Helping the other guy is the right thing to do. But I had to be told that. Right? But once I said, I don't give about another human being, I'm wrong. Okay? And so, again, you know, I start getting that hole in my soul. And I have to go and share that with my sponsor. You know, and now I have a new sponsor because my sponsor passed away. It's been now four years. And so I had to get a new sponsor, you know, because I believe in sponsorship. I believe that we need to have somebody that we can go and tell our secrets to. I believe that when I'm in a tight place, I need to be able to have somebody that I trust to share whatever it is that I'm going through at the time. And if you don't have somebody like that, then you need to find somebody like that. You know? And I had to tell him, you know, it's like, I don't know that I'm right in helping this guy out, because I see I come from a environment of violence. We like to fight. We like to shoot at people, and we like don't mind it when people shoot back, right? That's just the way I grew up, right? And so I'm torn inside, trying to figure out whether I did the right thing or not. And my sponsor had to tell me, Robert, what you did is heroic. Now, that for me really doesn't apply. But I know what I did was the right thing to do. And that's what I learned here in Narcotics Anonymous, is how to do the right thing, even if nobody's watching. Even if nobody's watching. Right? And my recovery continues. You know, my wife just, she threw me a surprise birthday party this year. And I was surprised for 30 years clean, right? And I had over 100 people there, right? And she did this like in a week and a half. And so, you know, she was only able to spread the word so much. Excuse me. And I was honored that many people showed up. And I had a part of my family who was not in recovery show up. And they got to experience Narcotics Anonymous through you guys. Right? None of them are in recovery. I know that some of them are trying to quit drinking and have quit drinking on their own. That's not for me to judge. Right? But for them to be there for me, that was important. I had about 20 family members. It was from one sister. That was her kids, their kids, and their kids. When my mom passed away, I'm real bad with dates. I think it's been 6 years now. Yes. I always have to look to my wife and make sure she's telling, I got the days right, the years right, because I think I sniffed too much paint. I sniffed too much gas, you know, because it didn't matter to me what I got high on. I just needed to get, there you go. I just needed to get high, right? You know, but, you know, see, it was really neat to just have all those people there, you know, and to, for them to be able to celebrate with me, you know. When my mom passed away, we counted children, great grandchildren, great grandchildren, great great grandchildren. She had 238. Yeah, and that was 6 years ago. And that family continues to grow, you know. And I have family in Indiana, I have family in Missouri, I have family in Arkansas, I have family in Reno, I have family in Vegas, family down south, family, you know, just everywhere, you know. And like I said, I have 7 brothers, and none of them are a member of Narcotics Anonymous. I am the only one who's a member of Narcotics Anonymous. One of my older brothers was a heroin addict for 25 years, and got off. Don't ask me how, but he got off. He's marijuana maintenance. That's how. But still, heroin is a hard drug to kick. Right? I have a brother who's a minister who had to go and do some prison time. You know, because sometimes, no matter whether we're spiritual or not, we make bad decisions. Right? I have a brother who drank a lot, you know, who had a son that was very angry and who they got in an argument, and he was stabbed by his own son. Didn't die, but it was close. Yeah. So I do come from a dysfunctional family. And my hope and my prayer is that here in Narcotics Anonymous, we can break that chain. You know, my hope and my prayer is that the people that are here tonight get to stay here tonight. Get to stay here in Narcotics Anonymous. Get the opportunity to experience the miracle of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, because this is probably, and I have to say this honestly, this is probably the best thing that's ever happened in my life. Because without Narcotics Anonymous, I don't have a God. Without Narcotics Anonymous, I don't have a wife. Without Narcotics Anonymous, I don't have any kids. And without Narcotics Anonymous, I do not have a job. And my dream as a young man to go to prison might just come true. You know, so I am very, very grateful to be a member of Narcotics Anonymous. I am very, very grateful and honored that you guys asked me to come here and share with you guys. And I just want to thank you and wish you all a good night. Love you.